You can forgive a few people for choosing not to speak the full name of one of the more virulent diseases of wild fish at 11 syllables. It's a long name, so most people just call it ick, which is not a bad name for it when you consider what it can do if left unchecked in a river system. Ick gets the blame for a major fish kill in the lower Klamath River in 2002. It has been detected in the river again this year and has prompted speedy responses to prevent another major die-off. Two guests join us, both representing the Yurok Tribe. Craig Tucker is the Yurok Tribe Klamath Coordinator. Craig, welcome back to The Exchange.
Hey, it's great to be here, and I'm the Karuk Tribe.
Karuk Tribe, what am I doing here? Okay, so Mike is with the Yurok Tribe.
Yes, that's
right.
Correct.
Mike Belchick is the Yurok Tribe Senior Fisheries Biologist. So thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange. Mike, what is ick, and can you give us the long name if it's any easier for you to pronounce after all these years?
It's Ichthyophthirius multifilius, and it's a protozoan parasite. It's a single-celled parasite that attaches itself to fish, gets really big, feeds on the fish, drops off, multiplies into thousands of little swimming bitey things called therons that then find another fish and repeat cycle. One ick organism can produce up to 1,000 therons. So the ick is capable of exponential growth. In other words, it can get bad really fast.
How much time are we talking about here? I mean, is this like an overnight breeding or a couple of days?
Well, it depends on temperature. So at the higher temperatures like we had in late summer, we're talking 3 to 5 days. At the temperatures we're looking at right now, 7 to 10 days. And once it gets cold, below mid-50s, the water temperature, which is about to happen, then it'll take up to 5 weeks. So it's very temperature dependent.
And is temperature pretty much the only condition that aggravates it, or are there some others that get in there too?
Well, once the animal falls off the fish, when it reaches size, and that's called a trophont, there's fancy names for each part of the life cycle, it hatches into all the little therons that need to find a fish. So crowded conditions also contribute to the spread of ick when there's a lot of fish, for example, for the therons to find.
Do the trophonts look, I mean, are they visible to the naked eye, or are they microscopic, or what?
Yeah, they start out not visible to the naked eye, although you can find them easily enough with a dissecting microscope. But by the time they reach full maturity, you can, in fact, see them. The single cell reaches about 0.8 of a millimeter, and for those who are metric system impaired, about the size of a grain of salt is about what they reach.
And Mike, was ick in fact the cause of that 2002 fish kill on the Klamath?
Yeah. It was what they call the proximal cause of death. So when the fish health experts came down and did autopsies on the fish, you know, looked at fish that had just died, ick was the cause of death. Then the question became, what caused the ick? It's a secondary, you know, contributing cause.
And Craig, the number I've seen bandied about generally about the 2002 fish kill was 70,000 roughly?
Yeah, well, it's a rough estimate, but somewhere around, the estimates range from 34,000 to 68,000 fish died in the fish kill. And, one of the positive things that has emerged from the fish kill in 2002 has been this sort of teamwork between tribes and between state and federal agencies to monitor for things like ick. And when we observe infections, there's actually a chain of events that follow. And, this year when Mike and his team down there on the Yurok Reservation found ick in the fish that were making their way upstream, it actually triggered additional releases from the Trinity Dam. And that additional flow releases may be what averted a fish kill this year. So it's sort of like, the fish kill was obviously a horrific event in the history of the Klamath, but I do think it has led to some, maybe you would want to call it adaptive management strategies to try to prevent it from happening in the future.
Was either of you on the job back in 2002 when the fish kill happened? I'm just curious to know, how long it took for there to be a response, or fish are already dead by the thousands by the time there was a response.
Yeah, I was there. I remember what happened. You know, every year, especially when you get large fish runs, there's a certain amount of background mortality. Some of the salmon just don't make it. It's a hard journey. So we started receiving some scattered reports of dead fish, and I really didn't think much of it. There was a weekend and a holiday, and when I came back to work, the numbers of fish were in the thousands and climbing rapidly. And when, by the time I got to the river, it was tens of thousands. The reason why the estimates are so imprecise was just the sheer magnitude. We're talking over 500,000 pounds of rotting fish, fish dying. We weren't even certain exactly what was going on. The one thing I knew it was not some sort of poisoning, because there were small fish around that were healthy. There were the birds and other animals that were there feeding on the fish weren't affected. There's no chemical odor. We knew it was a disease, and that was confirmed.
Does it tend to stay confined to just the Chinook salmon, or is it likely to end up in other fish as well, Mike?
Well, the other fish are assumed to be carriers. The Chinook salmon got it to the point where it caused mortalities, and we're still not exactly sure why resident fish that were in that area weren't also dying. Our fish health expert seems to believe that since they live in the river, they have an immune response that's capable of suppressing the disease to the point where they can survive. But the salmon coming in right off the ocean have no immunity like that.
We're talking about the presence of ick, the 11-syllable disease of fish that primarily infects Chinook salmon in the Klamath River. It is appearing again this year. Mike Belchick is the Yurok Senior Fisheries Biologist. Craig Tucker is the Karuk Tribe Klamath Coordinator. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with comments or questions. You might have some memories about that 2002 fish kill and maybe some thoughts about what's going on this year. Join us at 800-838-3760 around the region. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. So, Craig, you mentioned the response being very different this year, a dozen years later. So how extensive is the monitoring? How frequent? How many different places along the river? All that sort of thing.
Well, there's a variety of agencies, and Karuk, Yurok, and Hoopa tribes are out there monitoring. And you know, we kind of know what to look for. You know, no one had ever seen this sort of fish kill in the Klamath as a consequence of ick in 02. So, like as Mike was saying, no one knew what the heck was happening. And so now we do know what to look for, and we're still you know, training our fisheries technicians and the folks that are out there in the field how to recognize whether it's ick or there's a few other fish diseases that we're contending with. But there's, you know, the Bureau of Reclamation actually put in some protocols that when we observe infections at certain rates, it triggers additional flow releases on the Trinity side. And, you know, that gets more water in the lower river. And as Mike was saying, you know, this is a density-dependent disease. In other words, a lot of fish and a little bit of water, the disease can spread really rapidly. But when the river has more water in it, the fish disperse and you effectively, you know, dilute these microorganisms and inhibits their ability to find a new host. One of the problems we're confronting now is upstream of the Trinity confluence in the Middle Klamath, we're observing ick infections as well. But we really don't have, you know, the Trinity reservoirs are just these really enormous reservoirs with a very large pool of cold water. We really don't have that on the Klamath side, and so we can't just flip the switch and throw large amount of water down the river. On the Klamath side, we have smaller amounts of water to work with. And so one of the things we're struggling with this year is, okay, well, how do we manage for these infections upstream of the Trinity confluence on the Middle Klamath? And that's something we're trying to work out here in real time.
So what do we know at this point about this year's the fish run? And, I mean, we have spotted ick there. We know there have been some fish. I assume then some fish have died already, but do the Trinity releases happen quickly enough, it would appear, to head off a massive die-off? Mike?
Yeah, well, you know, it's important to understand that once the 2002 fish kill happened, we instituted monitoring downriver to actually look for the ick, and that involves catching fish and snipping off the first gill arch and getting a microscope out in the field and inspecting gills over and over again. And we found a little bit of ick in the year after the fish kill, although there was no dead fish. And then for the next 11 years, we didn't find any ick at all. Some of those years we had preventative flow releases from the Trinity River Reservoir, as Craig discussed. But this year we had a finding of ick, and it quickly escalated to the point where we're finding a lot of ick on fish, particularly, as Craig noted, above the Trinity River confluence. We're seeing virtually 100% infection rates, some quite heavy. But what we haven't seen yet is any fish mortalities. We're holding our breath. We're really hoping that we don't see any mortalities. But the arrows are pointing up the Klamath. The Trinity fish, even in the vicinity of the confluence, are less infected, probably because they enter the river later and just haven't spent as much time as the Klamath run in the river. So, you know, one thing that's really important is that our early warning system, in other words, catching the fish and directly looking at the gills, it worked. We caught this disease outbreak this year before we actually had bodies like that happened in 2002, and I think that's a really important thing.
That is fast action for sure. So, Craig, the way you were describing the whole process, I mean, do the Trinity releases get triggered by fewer sets of decision makers at this point? Is it a more fast track process to get releases to get water into the Trinity, to get therefore into the lower Klamath?
Well, I don't think there's a difference in the number of decision makers, but I think it's just simply a result of the O2 fish kill and how folks have responded and what we learned in the fish kill and what we've learned in these years afterwards. And, you know, it's been this big, you know, the fish kill happened in the lower river on the Yurok Reservation. And so as we, you know, use the Trinity to kind of maybe mitigate infection rates, or at least try to use that water to stave off infections, you know, we don't have a similar mechanism on the Klamath. And it's a big problem. You know, on the Klamath, fish are headed to places like the Scott and the Shasta and other tributaries, because the majority of these fish want to spawn in the tributaries. And because of the magnitude of the drought this year, these fish are basically going to be in large schools at the mouths of these tributaries waiting on the rains to come, because right now these tributaries don't have enough water in them to start their migration up into Scott, places like Scott Valley. So we're really concerned if they're carrying this parasite. When they form schools at the mouths of these tributaries, there's going to be an opportunity for the disease to run rampant through those schools of fish and possibly leave us with a fish kill. So, you know, there's a few things we can do. You know, for their part, Pacific Corps has agreed to contribute up to 16,000 acre-feet of water to help us balance flows in the Klamath. So there's an opportunity for a little bit more water, not loads more, but a little more water on the Klamath River. But we really need people who are still diverting water out of our tributaries, whether it's somebody thinks it's a legal diversion or an illegal diversion. If you're growing hay or if you're growing marijuana, whatever it is, it's time to turn off those diversions and help get the flows in our tributaries up high enough that these adult fish can move out of the Klamath and really make it to their spawning grounds.
Some rain did make it into those basins recently. Was it enough to make much of a difference in the level, for example, of the Scott and the Shasta rivers, Craig?
Well, you know, I have to say on the Shasta, we're doing much better. And part of the reason the rain certainly helped. I mean, farmers don't have to irrigate if Mother Nature is doing the irrigating. And the Shasta is a spring-fed system. So, you know, despite the drought, there's still a lot of springs pumping water, surface water that's coming into the Shasta River. And the Nature Conservancy has brokered some agreements with landowners to put water in the river and stop diverting. So, you know, the Shasta is actually looking pretty good. But the Scott don't have that same kind of, it's not a spring-fed system in the same way the Shasta is. And people are using enormous amounts of groundwater in the Scott, and it's not really a regulated use of water. And so here we are in the summer, and there's very little water to be had in the Scott, and we're running the risk of a fish kill because of it.
We are talking to Craig Tucker, the Karuk Tribe Klamath Coordinator, and Mike Belchick, the Yurok Tribe Senior Fisheries Biologist, about ick, the disease of fish showing up in the Klamath River once again this year, the same disease that caused the massive fish die-off 12 years ago. A lot of action thus far to try to make sure that the river stays as cool and as fast as possible to keep the fish alive. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 around the region, in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Anne in Eugene. Welcome to the exchange.
Thank you. Doesn't this whole problem go back to the over-allocation of water on the entire Klamath system? And what's being done to buy back water rights? And it, wasn't there some kind of legislation this year in California about also groundwater regulation? Thank you.
Indeed there was. Thanks for that call, Ann. You've been paying attention. That's great. Craig?
Yeah, I think the overallocation of water is a big deal, so I'll talk about that first. You know, one of the ways we've been trying to solve what we see as a fisheries crisis on the Klamath is to do two things. One is remove dams, and one is to better balance the water use between agriculture and fisheries. And so we've brokered a series of agreements on the Klamath. We've referred to them as the Klamath Restoration Agreements, but the formal name is the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement and the Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement. And implementing these, if we implemented these agreements, two things would happen. First is it would trigger a series of events that would lead to dam removal in 2020 of the lower four dams. And second, it would enable the Klamath Irrigation Project upstream to more efficiently use water available and put firm limitations on how much water they could take out of the system. In order to implement these agreements, we need to act to Congress. And so there's legislation has been introduced by Senators Wyden and Merkley and Boxer and Feinstein, and we're working through that process back in D.C. In regards to groundwater, California did act this year for the first time passing laws to regulate groundwater use. And remarkably, California has been really kind of the Wild West when it comes to regulating groundwater use. So basins like the Scott and the Shasta are going to have groundwater management plans that allow for sustainable groundwater use and take into consideration the impacts to fisheries. And those groundwater management plans have to be in effect by 2022. So we've got a few years where we'll be developing those plans, developing the data set necessary to develop those plans, but it's slowly but surely coming into to the modern world here and acknowledging the groundwater is a limited resource.
All right, Anna, thanks again for the question. Here's Ryan in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking Klamath Fish with Craig Tucker and Mike Belchick. Hi, Ryan.
Good morning, Jeffrey. Thanks. This is interesting, and maybe you addressed this a bit, but as you've been talking about groundwater, just maybe think even more about the role of temperature and those special little zones on the river, the refugia where fish can hang out in cold water. And so what's the role of temperature, water temperature monitoring in dealing with ick?
Good question, Ryan. And Mike, could you also address what the normal range is for Chinook and what they're experiencing in really hot years like this one?
Yeah, I think that's a really great question, actually. So we've been observing these thermal refugia areas, so thermal meaning heat and refuge. So these areas where the creeks come in, we've been looking at these for over 15 years now. And through repeated observations, we've gotten a sense of exactly what temperatures fish will migrate at and when they just can't migrate and find refuge and hole up. So we speak in Celsius, so at 22 degrees Celsius, the fish will stop migrating and seek refuge. That's right around 74 degrees Fahrenheit or so. This is higher than a lot of the published literature, but it's what we see time and time again on the river. So this year in particular, There was a run of fish on the Trinity Spring Run in the middle of summer, and the temperature soared this summer. It was one of the hottest summers I can remember. It resulted in very high water temperatures and a large number of adult fish spending the entire summer at a particular thermal refuge spot called Blue Creek, about 15 miles up from the mouth. This was one of the reasons that we were quite concerned this year about an ick outbreak, even though we hadn't seen it in a long time, because the last time a large number of adults spent the summer at the Blue Creek like that was in 2002, when we had the fish kill. So we didn't have scientific proof that that would cause a fish kill, but it did raise our level of concern, and lo and behold, we end up finding ick for the first time. We're starting to put together some more links besides just straight-up temperature or run size or what the flow in the main stem is, but starting to be able to look at things like, well, how many fish spent the summer in the thermal refuge all crowded together and possibly starting to spread the disease and things like that.
So even before you saw ick, you knew the conditions were ripe for ick showing up. And so when has, I mean, a lot of the coverage seems to stop at about September 22nd or so. Any further evidence of fish die-offs at this point, or are we pretty much holding steady at the moment?
Right now, we are on enhanced reconnaissance. We're going up and down the river. We're still capturing fish and looking for ick, but we haven't seen any ick or dead bodies yet at this point.
All right. Mike Belchik is the UROC Senior Fisheries Biologist. Thank you for joining us. Craig Tucker, Karuk Tribe Klamath Coordinator, thank you both again for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange today.
Hey, thanks for having us.
You bet. Short break in the exchange. We'll come back and listen to Garrison Keillor.